Good morning. Good morning, dear listeners, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe. And I think it's quite very important to thank Matthias Sangala with the Twilight. Yes, it's that time of the early morning where we discuss about economic, trade, governance, politics, and everything which affect our bread and butter. It's the 6th of October, 2025, early morning of the 6th of October. And wherever you are finding yourself, we are greeting you. Wherever you are finding yourself, from your number one talk radio station in Namibia, Eagle FM. And yeah, whatever you are planning to do, especially which is positive and also contributing to the national development, make sure that you do it to the best of your abilities, because you don't know that your effort that you are putting on also being able to assist those who are in need. And yeah, it's quite very important also to look at what is happening around the world. What is happening around the world before we go to what we have on the table. Like we're always indicating, make sure that you get access to the Villager newspaper. You get access to the Villager newspaper, which is coming out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And make sure that if you are a business person, make sure that you know, you advertise with Eagle FM Namibia, so that you can have access to your potential clients. And yeah, you can communicate with marketing manager, that is Monica Ipinge, at 083-288-400. This morning of Early Morning Scoop, we are looking at African laws. What is that we have done to make sure that the standing of the constitutions that we are using, the standing of international statutes that we are using, we have contributed, and what are the challenges in these laws, and also how is the incorporation of our ideas? We are going to look at various examples, and also to see what can we do to move forward. However, before we go on that ground, it's also very, very important to look at international ground, to say what is happening on international ground, what are happenings on international ground, and also to see in terms of moving forward, how can we navigate the new changes in the global arena, because there are always things that affect the way we do things. There are always things that affect the way we we operate domestically. That is why you cannot really discuss issues without looking at what is happening on an international ground. So the first thing that we need to look at is to look at the French, prime minister, the new French, it was indicated that the new French prime minister has assembled a cabinet amid intense protest, because as you understand that the past month France was going through difficult roads, particularly looking at their economic standard, and also looking at their politics. That's why we're able also to see, in terms of French politics, there have been changes in government. There have been changes in government, and there have also been changes in terms of those who are leading, particularly at the center of government administration is a prime minister, who is elected by French Parliament, and also appointed by the President. But not a month ago, former Prime Minister was forced to resign because he was not able to pass the budget, and it brought a lot of views, particularly when it comes to international analysts, to say what is the future of France, in terms of governance, in terms of the economy, and also in terms of the influence that France has, especially on international ground. Because remember, when you look at the economy of France, it has been not doing well, very well. Looking at their debt per GDP ratio, which is beyond 114%, and it was the aim of the previous Prime Minister Francois to make sure that you know, in terms of putting the government in order, he was proposing cutting of you know, public service expenditure, but he was not able you know, to go through. But in this regard, we'll also be able to see if the new Prime Minister will also manage to navigate through the French politics, and we see how things are going to turn out. Remember, as we have been indicating, to say part of the economic challenge is losing of international influence, and also losing of trading partners, particularly those key African countries with mineral resources, the former French colonies such as Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, Central Africa, and many other countries who decided to stand on their own and realize that it will not be practically possible to continue trading raw materials, and it will not be practically possible to make sure that they follow what has been put on the table, particularly when it's coming to paying of colonial tax, and also making sure that those who are owning mineral interests, especially from outside, they dictate the trade, they dictate the shares, and they also dictate how they are going to move with their trading, you know, issues. So that is what is happening on international international ground. And also there's also the aspect of when you look at, for example, when you look at for example, in what is happening, let us look at Israel and also Gaza. As you understand that due to international pressure, and also due to the pressure from UNGA, United Nations General Assembly, where world leaders said they will not stand anymore with Israel, particularly when it comes to the continuation of genocide in Gaza, where you also be able to see NATO allies such as Britain, Germany, and many other countries are indicating to say the genocide in Gaza must stop, and it must end now. And you are also being able to see African leaders and Asian leaders who were standing against Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, particularly when it's coming to addressing issues of genocide, when it comes to address issues of war in Gaza, with UN independent report indicating that more than 65,000 people of Palestine in Gaza strips were killed since you know, October 2023, and there have been a recommendation for humanitarian intervention and ceasefire. But recently the President of the United States of America, Donald Trump, met with Benjamin Netanyahu and put a proposal on the table, especially sent to Hamas leaders, to make sure that in terms of war, there must be the end of war. And he proposed a plan of a demand plan to say the Hamas must agree in order to end a war. And finally, Netanyahu has also indicated that you know, he was very happy. I was very happy with the facilitation of Donald Trump, and he indicated that the Hamas must admit what was proposed on the table, particularly by the President of the United States of America, and also to end war. If they don't admit, he indicated to say Israel will continue with its plan, but something that we need to look at, and also something that we need to analyze, particularly moving forward, especially when it comes to global peace, trade, and also issues of how international governance system is operating. Because when you look at how the world is standing now, the world is divided. The world is divided, either in terms of trade, or also in terms of war that is happening on that aspect. Yeah, looking at what is happening at home, particularly in the African continent, it was indicated that Malawian president, that is Arthur Peter Mutharika, was finally sworn in. The president of Malawi after his historical political comeback, which surprised a lot of people, because he led the government of Malawi from 2014 to 2020. Then he was outset by the incumbent president. He lost the presidential elections in 2019 due to irregularities. However, he made the historical political comeback by defeating his incumbent president, who is Razau Chakwera. In that national vote, he got Peter Mutharika got 56%, while Razau Chakwera got 33%. But what is very interesting is also the question of asking is that what is that new that he will bring on the table? What are the lessons that he will bring on the table, particularly looking at the fact that he was the president, and also looking at the politics of Africa? Because when you look at his inaugural speech, especially on Saturday, he blamed the previous government of Malawi for not handling the country's economy very well, and indicated to say the economic crisis that Malawi is facing now is a man-made economic crisis, and he prayed that he is going to improve a Malawian economy, and he also prayed to look for international investors, not to look for aid, but he indicated that he will look for international investors. And when you look at the history of the president of Malawi, or the current now Peter Mutharika, who is coming for the second time, it's a very interesting history, because he was an international law professor, and has a doctorate in law, which is a doctorate in judicial science, and he taught in various universities such as United States of America. He taught in the UK. He also taught in Tanzania, Ethiopia, Uganda. He was an accomplished academician who specialized in international economic law and also constitutional law. And we see what the future of Africa are looking like. And the 84-year-old president, the 85-year-old president indicated that the least developed country, or Malawi being the least, one of the least developed countries in the world, will be, improved, particularly when it's coming to trade, investment, and also its high rate of inflation, where you will be able to realize that when you go to Malawi, in terms of fuels, there is also a shortage of fuels. There is their currency is, especially in terms of foreign exchange, is weak foreign exchange. But the men took power democratically, and we see what will happen, because interestingly, you'll be able also to see that some people, maybe some people change, maybe a person learn a lesson, because it's quite unusual, especially in Africa, for a president to make a strong political comeback, because it's happening only outside, in most cases outside Africa. You see the likes of Donald Trump, but in most cases when the president loses power, particularly when he's defeated politically, it's very difficult to come back. But after Peter Mutharika, he took the president of Malawi, democratically elected, and we see how the future is looking like. Let us look at this news before we touch on what we have, particularly in the context of Africa, and also let us see how this inaugural or inauguration of Peter Mutharika happened, and get his bold communication and statement regarding what he is going to do new, and also what the future of Malawi looking like.
Pressures and a lack of foreign exchange. Hope for Malawians as Peter Mutharika was sworn in on Saturday as the country's new president. In his inaugural speech, he vowed to root out government corruption and rebuild the ailing economy. He takes over as the country faces cost of living pressures and a lack of foreign exchange.
Malawi is in the middle of a crisis. There is no food, there is no forex, there is fuel shortage, and the cost of living is an insane high. There is no money in the government, borrowing is extremely high, and nobody knows where the borrowed money went.
Mutharika, who was president from 2014 to 2020, said it would not be easy, but he promised Malawians he would fix the country through hard work and tough and painful decisions. Mutharika is a God-given leader to redeem Malawians from the hunger situation we have. As he's being sworn in today, the prices of grain have already started reducing on the market. We're grateful. Soaring inflation and food and fuel shortages led to a deep discontent with the leadership of outgoing President Lazarus Chakwera. Mutharika called on the international community to invest in Malawi, saying the country wanted partnerships, not handouts.
Yes, we see also the presence of ED Emmerson Mnangagwa at inauguration, and we also be able also to see the president of Mozambique give respect, especially honoring the inauguration of Peter Mutharika, as the head of state. And in a democratic society, the head of state must be respected. Once somebody is sitting on that highest seat on the land, must be respected. And when he get the instrument of power, that is a person you have to deal with for the next 5 years. And we see what will happen in the context of Malawi, particularly on the ground of development, because that is how things are as we are speaking. And and it's also a question of Africans to ask ourselves, to say, what do we really want? What do we really want? Because is there no other alternative, or what is that we want, especially the citizens? We are complaining about the current government. When we put on the new government, we are complaining to say, no, please come back. This one is not good. What is that really that we want, and what is that we are not doing right? It's also a question of accountability, because had people thought they would want the president back, they would have given him the second term. But now you are also delaying connection in terms of leadership. Could have given him the second term consecutively. Maybe he could have improved something. But now, returning the man back to power is quite a very interesting sign. It's quite a very interesting sign, especially on the ground of, democracy. Now, let us look at DRC. was indicated that Democratic Republic of Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo, has pushed back against U.S. pressure on critical minerals. It was indicated that the country which hold the world's largest reserve of combat minerals indicated that in terms of a trade, they would want to add value. They would want to add value and also make a fair profit, and indicated that the president of DRC, Felix Tshisekedi, indicated that he is demanding mineral deals to translate into tangible development and also local value addition. This is something interesting, because it's indicated that this has complicated a negotiation with the United States, which is also racing to secure cobalt, also racing to secure cobalt in international trade. And one will also be able also to see new development, new pronunciation, particularly when it comes to the use of minerals. Then the question is that what is that that DRC is going to do, particularly when it comes to additional value to cobalt? Remember, in terms of in terms of the world combination, or in terms of the world total output of cobalt, DRC is supplying around 70% in the world. And you may be interested also in knowing that what is this critical minerals that you know, there is you know, negotiations being held, or renegotiations and also refocus. What is the use of cobalt? You may be able to realize that when it comes to car batteries, cobalt is used for car batteries. It's also used for magnets and magnetic materials. It's also used for hard materials or hard metals, and can also used in health industry, radioactive use, and quite a lot of you know, use, particularly in the globe. That's why speaking at Jimpe Landry Partner, DRC president indicated that Congo must prioritize clauses that guarantee local industrialization, job creation, and also balancing foreign exchange with national sovereignty over, or national sovereignty over resources. You may be able also to, realize that when we were discussing about that issue, particularly in September, where DRC also realized that, to say, this aspect of exchanging minerals over development must also change, because there is no clear scale, particularly when it comes to exchanging of minerals to developed countries, to develop your infrastructure, because it's quite very difficult to measure, particularly when it comes to development, because the value is not quite very clear, because that is practicing of barter trading in the 21st century, which limit, you know, clear analysis of, to say, what value of what I'm giving you, and also what am I going to benefit from there? Is it a fair deal, or is just a deal for the sake of being a deal? So it's quite very interesting. It's quite very interesting to see, because not only cobalt, Congo or DRC supply a lot of minerals, and it's a wealthy nation in terms of minerals, and there is still estimation of still undiscovered minerals beneath DRC, and with a population of 100 million people, and it's a lower income country, and in terms of development, it's a country which is very far. It's the least developed countries, and it's also one of the most unstable country in Africa, where war is the order of the day, where the government does not have total control of the whole territorial, or there is no what is called protection of territorial integrity. The president is in charge of 70%, 30%, the rebels which are dividing. And it's quite a very interesting aspect to see, particularly when it comes to development moving forward. So yeah, let us look at the last news locally, the last news continentally, before we go to what do we have on the table today, what are we going to discuss today, and also what are those areas that that we are going to look at, particularly regarding the topic of today. It was indicated that South Africa sent a group of investigators to France to deal with to get an analysis or to investigate particularly the South African ambassador to France who fell or who jumped from the 22nd story building floor number 22 in the palace in France, one of the hotels, jumped from the 22nd story building, some of the tallest building. I don't think in Windhoek we
welcome back the South African welcome back.
I don't think in Windhoek we still have that building of that nature. We have 22 stories, and he died, and he was the former minister of police, and South Africa decided to say for them to fight justice. And what really happened, they sent a delegation of top investigators to work with a French authority to see what really happened to their diplomat. What really happened to their diplomat, somebody who was head of mission and died a mysterious death. And remember, at the same time, South Africa also going through some of the investigation going on within the South African justice system or South African security system, where you have investigation over infiltration of South African police system, the justice system, especially the indicator by cartels. Then you also be able to see currently as you are speaking, South Africa is an acting minister of police, where the minister of police is under suspension, and there's also a suspension of the deputy commissioner of the police. And it's quite very interesting also to see what is happening, what will be the outcome. What would be the outcome of that investigation? Is it formality, or is it what is going to happen? Is it going to bring the outcome? Because the death of Nathi Mtetwa was one of the shocking death, particularly in SADC and also on the international platform, something of that nature. Diplomats were supposed to be people who are protected, and also people who are varied, and they were not supposed to be dying such mysterious death. But let us look at this news and see moving forward.
African Police Services will today send a five-member team to France on Ambassador Nathi Mtetwa's death investigation, and the team will be working very closely with French law enforcement authorities in order to ensure that the circumstances surrounding Ambassador Mtetwa's death are thoroughly as well as transparently investigated. And to further unpack this for us, let's extend a very warm welcome to forensic expert Ms. Dorothy Moshi. Dorothy, we do appreciate your time on the show today. Welcome. So look, I just want to get your expert opinion on the current revelations around the death of former police minister Nathi Mtetwa in France. What are you reading into what we've currently been told thus far?
Yeah, thank you for having me on your show. Good afternoon to yourself and your viewers.
Yeah, that is what's happening. That is what's happening. And it's quite interesting also to see, and also to look what will be the outcome of the investigation, who will be held accountable, will be held accountable for what have happened, and also what is the future of South African diplomacy in France looking like, and also who is going to replace the late Nathi Ntetwa, because on an international ground, business must continue. Business must continue, because you can't be without the head of mission in a strategic country like France, and you have to send somebody, or it's they call the charge d'affaires. It's always second in charge, or the diplomat who will take over. But we also be interested to see who is going to be deployed at that platform, and what other security precautions are going to be put in that sector. So, for those of you coming on the radio for the first time, this is Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe, and we are moving forward with what is happening. However, on this news, you can still call in to give your input, to give your contribution at 083-288-401-083-288-401, particularly on what's happening, particularly on what is happening, and also in terms of developments on what is happening around. And yeah, before we go to what we have on the table, it's also quite very interesting also to see that when it's coming to gold demand, gold become one of the minerals which is in demand, particularly on international ground in terms of trade, where you'll be able to see that when it's come to the World Gold Council data, it's indicated that gold demand has shown remarkable resilience with 3% year-on-year increase, and in the second quarter of 2025, when it's coming to 3% year-to-year increase, it's up to 1,248.8 metric tons. And you'll be able also to see that countries with gold, they are standing a very good chance. And we are also one of them. We are also one of them. You look at B2 gold and other areas. We'll be able to see that we are part of that, that list. And, gold is becoming very powerful. And, when you look at a country like Zimbabwe, one of the latest report, particularly from IMF, is indicating that Zimbabwe is doing very well economically, which shocked a lot of people after quite some times or suffering from sanctions. It was indicated that when it's coming to the current statistics, 2025, Zimbabwe's economy is becoming stable day to day, and be able to say that even when you look at the prediction of African Development Bank, first it's predicted that Zimbabwe's economy will grow by 5%, but they have to go back and reevaluate to say no, it's actually going to be at 6%, which is quite very interesting. When you look at the output of maize, you look at the output of grains, when you look at the output of platinum, you'll be able also to see that those who are in charge of Zimbabwe trade will be able also to be praised for that. Because remember, at one point, Zimbabwe was called the breadbasket of Africa. It was supplying food to the whole of Africa, and was actually doing very well. Even that time, when Zimbabwe got independence after 1979, you'll be able also to see that Zimbabwe was supposed to be the leading country in SADC region, not South Africa, but due to that political move, or due to that economic sanctions, the country lost between 140 to 170 billion dollars since 2001, due to the economic opportunities, and also economic sanctions to trade. Because when international institutions sanction you, even your friends that used to trade with you, they get scared of you. Then unless you are selling at the black market, then you will not be able to sell. But the same institutions such as International Monetary Fund, which at one point put sanctions on Zimbabwe, same institution which is pressing Zimbabwe, and is also giving recommendation also to see Zimbabwe must continue strengthening its policy, and it has potential to improve its development. And World Bank also indicated to say, Zimbabwe with its very strong human capital, they can be able to rebound, and can be able also to take a stage in international trade due to its well-educated nation. And also, once given that opportunity, they will be able to move forward. So, let us look at, let's pay the bills. Then we come with African jurisprudence and see what is our contribution to the laws that we are using. What is the foundation of African laws, the customary laws, what we called customary laws, traditional laws, incorporated correctly in the, either it's in the constitution, national policies, and also how is the system operating? Is the legal system operating on the ground that is benefiting the people on the ground? Is the legal system also able to allow people to benefit economically? And is the legal system need to be revised? What are some of the challenges that our policymakers are finding? What are some of the challenges even our leaders are faced with, particularly when it's coming to making of correct decisions that economically benefiting the needy, collective decision that will be able to take the country to the next level? And we are going to look at that aspect, and we are also going to give some examples, particularly to those thinkers and scholars from the African perspectives, to see what do they have to say about the current legal system, and what are some of the challenges, what are some of the opportunities, and also what is the future looking like? Because it's very interesting also to see that without laws, there is a saying to say what differentiate men or differentiate a human being from other animals is the ability to formulate laws, put order, and also being able to follow that laws, because without laws and principles, we are not different from other animals. But that is what defining us, and is it really defining us to our interest? Those are the questions that we are going to ask moving forward.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know, a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any other.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know, a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with the...
We are moving forward with Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe. And as I indicated, today we are going to look at the aspect of the law, the aspect of the legal system, and also what is called African jurisprudence. And just to look at that context, when you speak about African jurisprudence, you are speaking about African foundation or the body of laws, the thinking and the reasoning and the contribution of those thinking to the context of, from the context of Africa. And just before we go to the current legal system, you must be able to understand that beforehand, or there is a saying to say, a nation without traditional customs, norms, and values is like a well-organized journey without knowing where you are going. Have you ever been excited? You pack your bags, you are very excited, you are in a certain transport, but you actually do not know the direction where you are going because you do not have the foundation. Okay, let us take the caller and also see what is the input before we go to... Hello?
David.
Yes?
Good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm well.
Good. The issue of the ambassador of Africa.
Mm.
And it's good that they sent the team there to investigate.
Yeah.
But, you know, issues of, I'm not going, without speculating, issues of South Africa, where there's a lot of confusion when it comes to their security cluster.
Yeah.
And you are saying that he was a former minister.
Yeah, he was a minister of police at one point.
Minister of police.
Yeah.
At one point.
Mm-hmm.
And the, most of the issue that we are hearing now.
Yeah.
Within that cluster.
Yeah.
Are very disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I just hope and believe God that he's not part of this, that team.
But he was mentioned in the commission at one point before his death.
Oh, he was mentioned.
Yeah.
Oh, no wonder.
No, but you cannot come to the conclusion without clear evidence.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And the Wakutingo, Oshikeshiki Ashuri, Okulemon, to White Nashi, Oshimani, Oshikurundi, Oshikurundi,
Oshimati, Ashuri Okulemon.
Yeah.
So
I strongly, my speculation are very strong.
Yeah.
And I still believe that if that not, if it's not a suicide.
Yeah.
And then it is something very strange.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe it will be revealed.
You yeah.
know, the truth is always revealed. It doesn't hide. That's yeah. what God is telling us.
Yeah.
So that is, let me pump that one aside.
Mm.
And the other thing is on the, since you are coming to Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
Zimbabwe, my brother, you know, we all know that Zimbabwe has been doing very, very well.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that, yes, they got, they were also colonized.
Mm.
And they were really basket of Africa, even before Namibia got independence.
Even before South Africa.
You see now?
Mm.
So, and they, now they have picked up, and I love them because of their education. Somebody was brought here to give a testimony how he started his business.
Yeah.
And I can also tell mine next time.
Yeah.
So the Zimbabwean have really inspired us and motivated us so many structures in terms of business. How to fold your hands. Eh?
Yeah.
We got this inspiration from Zimbabwean people.
Yeah, yeah.
With their degrees and masters.
Yeah.
And carrying mob and these other things.
Mm.
And we mock them. I say, this one, this other one. With their degrees and masters.
Yeah.
So that's how they are.
That's how they are.
They can do anything.
Mm.
They don't even say, no, how should I clean when I've got a degree?
But what do you think about the same institution which put sanction on Zimbabwe, the same institution which is praising Zimbabwe and they are also giving advice? What do you think about that?
The same institution that is doing what?
That at one point put sanctions against Zimbabwe, like the World Bank and IMF.
Yeah, those bodies are not... They are very, I don't know how to describe them. They always promote their interests.
Mm-hmm.
So once they see you doing well,
mm-hmm.
they might want to put sanctions. They might want to interfere with the leadership and all these things. They just want things to be working in their own interest.
Yeah.
But we should also come up with our own body.
Maybe they want you to go and get loans again. So you depend on them. So.
So please, let's not, getting a loan.
Yeah.
And then you can be able to service it.
Yeah.
And it should not cripple you into poverty.
Yeah.
And then it's not really a big issue, just like an individual getting a loan from anywhere.
Mm.
So you need to service that loan, and it must not be more than your income or whatever.
Yeah.
You economists, you know better. So I will wait until you come with this African indigenous law, how they can be incorporated, these things. Because many a times, even when there is a case,
tried in our
community court, for example.
Yeah.
Many a times, they challenge it, and this they say, no, this common law, and this other one is not constitutional.
Yeah.
And all these things. But we have got some of the values and norms that you can really. Because they were not documented, and most of them are informal, in an informal way.
Who made them informal? If it's our laws.
No, it's informal. They made because they are not documented. They are only told from one generation to another.
Yeah.
And sometimes you might not get some evidence there.
Mm.
If there's a call and they want you to have a case law.
Yeah.
For that particular thing, sometimes you might need to find them. But when you now invalidate those kind of principles, just simply because they are not in line with the this common or whatever law or that you were talking with Matthias.
Mm-hmm.
So about the sources of our law, customer law. These traditional issues are also source of our constitution.
Mm-hmm.
But then, when it comes to this, I've known a lot of cases where they were challenged. One of them was challenged or two by Chombe, and it was declared unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at those cases, these are cases that are also constitutional in terms of our traditional customer law.
Mm-hmm.
So we really have a big problem. Just because we cannot prove that, yes, this has happened in this time. But in the Deutsche, in the Lohmann and all this, the Lohmann Deutsche law and all these other things, you still find the cases of those, but they have destroyed our document.
Yeah.
They have carried them out.
Yeah.
Maybe they have even made it theirs.
Mm-mm.
So hence, when we have a problem like this, they say there's no evidence.
Mm-hmm,
we want
to
see the case law of these particular things
when
they have destroyed. If you go to their museum, maybe in Europe or wherever, you might find our cases there.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, David, for giving me an opportunity.
Thank you for your contribution.
Welcome.
Yes, we are moving forward. We are looking at... African jurisprudence, which is the foundation of African philosophy of law, and also to see that in terms of the current system that we are operating within, to what extent are the Africans, to what extent are the African knowledge, African legal thinking, and also African legal knowledge is used in those laws.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its
Eagle staff. FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear or favor.
This is actually to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura, and I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Yes, at the beginning I've asked a question to say, have you ever been excited about the journey that you do not know where it's going? You are just there in a bus, you pack your bags, you are excited, you are very happy, and you do not know exactly where you are going. That is a saying, particularly within the African tradition, to say a country without traditional norms and values is like a journey without knowing, or it's like you being in a journey without knowing your destination. And have you ever asked yourself these questions to say, with our current legal system, where are we going? Whose laws are we using? What is the contribution of the Africans to these laws? Why is traditional laws, or what is known as customary laws, are used as the second interest when it's coming to legal interpretation? And why are some part of the constitutions are not be able to be changed? And was the constitution, or were the legal system and legal instruments were supposed to be standing without answering to the interest of the people? Why should I not use a case, for example? Let me use, for example, there has always been in law, especially in criminal law, when a legal representative is arguing on a case, there is always a reference on previous cases. There is always a reference on previous cases to say, in the case of David versus Agabwana in 1998, the conclusion of the judgment was this one. In the case of David versus Tobias Ohu, they can even reference cases outside Namibia. But have you ever asked your questions to say, they have disputes are disputes. There have been disputes which were sorted in a traditional way. Why should an African lawyer cannot come to the court and say, in Okwanyama tradition, for example, in the time of Mandume Ademfayo, there was a case between James and Angola, just for example, it's not a real case. Between James and Angola, they were fighting over a kettle and what. And this was the final conclusion of the judgment. Why should I not reference that? But when you go back, when you look at, for example, a country like, when you go to UK, UK does not have a standing constitution, does not have a standing codified constitution like Namibia. They are part of conventions, part of, different legal instruments which are used in interpretation of that. And have you ever asked yourself to say, now, when you look at our legal system, you'll be able to realize that we are following in most of it is Roman Dutch law. And when you be able to read those text, those legal interpretation, some of these legal interpretation, there's a legal language which legal professionals are using, and they boast about it. They are speaking, it's Latin. There are words in the Latin. These things of pro bono, these things, they are not our things. They are lacunas, them, and these legal jargons that they use, they are not our thing. But have you really understood what we are doing? And in terms of that system, to what extent have we contributed to it? And what can we do moving forward? And have you ever tried to say, man, let us see, let us incorporate and respect where we are coming from, let us look at these laws at the same standard. Because, look at it this way. When, in a traditional setting, those years when you have committed a crime, let me say you killed a person, they are taking you to those traditional leaders, different levels until you go to a king, where a king also have those who understand customary law very well, those who interpret customary laws very well, lawyers of that time, those who can look at issues from both ways, then they can be able to give you a punishment. And when you look at the way the tradition have been punishing people, you'll be able to understand that if you have cattle, you have to pay, your family has to pay. But there are also punishments to say, okay, you are also going to work. We give you hard work so that you also contribute. Because when you are working, let me say you are working in the field in the next 5 years without getting any payment, you are also contributing to the food production of that community setting. But now when you look at and it was quite interesting, productive, and also avoidant or help in reducing a lot of crimes in Africa. Because when you have committed something, then they say, no, the elders are going to meet. When the elders meet, they come up with a sound judgment. And that sound judgment, based on interpretation of customary law, you'll be able to be punished accordingly. But what is happening now? You kill the person. You stole something. Or let me say you break somebody's leg. Or you were fighting, or you injured a person, permanent injury. Then you are taken to prison for 3 years. You are not doing anything. You are eating, three meals a day. You are using electricity, water, and you also have medical attention when you are sick. Now the question that you are asking yourself is that who is paying for this thing? The same parents of the kid that you have injured, or the same parent of a kid that you have killed, they are still paying tax and they are still assisting you. But who is losing from this system? The person who is losing from this system is the whole government, and is also the whole people who are paying tax. Because this person, if we could have incorporated traditional way of punishment, this person could be not to say become a slave. This person can work in the field, can use his technical knowledge, work, so you can contribute to national development until to the point that you have served your judgment. Let me say you have a civil engineer who committed a crime. The person go to prison for 5 years. Nothing. We lose of human capital. Loss of human capital. It doesn't mean that this person was supposed to work. Use your skills. Work. Contribute to national development. While you are serving your sentence, maybe part of the negotiation on the reduction of your sentence. Because at the end of the day, we just continue paying tax, and we are building we are expanding prison, and we are complaining about, we are complaining about prisons being full. But have we understood that what you call correctional services is not actually correctional services? We are just producing many criminals. Some people are even very happy to go to jail to get 3 days meal, and also to continue doing their gang violent activities within the legal system. When you look at South Africa, people are making more money in prison than they are outside, particularly those from the criminal underworld. But have we understood where we are coming from? It will be different. It will be different because much investment in an unproductive human being, this person was supposed to work. Or this person was supposed to work, because there have been always punishment. They call it the traditional palace. There have always been punishment, and people were following. But now, when you look at traditional laws, yes, they are respected, but they are not looked at the same level. It's like you are looking behind. But now, let us now come to our current legal system. The question that you need to ask yourself is that, what is the purpose of the law? okay, defense of human rights, put order in the society, solutions of dispute, but the main purpose of the law is to assist those who have state power to make sure that they benefit the individuals. It's not about punishment. It's about, it was about corrections. But now when you look at the current lawyers, legal students, you look at they are actually very happy to become lawyers. But you are, when you are asking them to say what is that that you are going to do different, one of the motivation is finance and status. But what is that that you are going to do different to the people? Are you going to be very happy just to send people in jail? But are you not able to see where the problem is? Because at the end of the day, the society must move forward. I'm not saying people should not be punished. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm indicating to you is that there must be more than winning a case. There must be issues of legal analysis and look at what is working and what is not working. What are some of the legal instruments? What are some of the colonial legal instruments that are still being used and are oppressing us? You'll be surprised. You'll be surprised when it was very interesting also to look at, especially the case of Redline. I'm not an expert in law, but looking at it, for example, ask yourself these questions to say, why do we have a country which is economically divided by a red line until now? Why can't we solve that issue? I'm not saying you must maintain or remove it, but ask yourself, why do we have that at that point? Whose interest is that law is serving? Is it really what is ought to be? And the other thing that you need to ask yourself is that what is that that can be changed to make sure that some of the laws that are economically implicating the people of Namibia are being relooked at? Have you ever asked yourself, why do you think it took around 3 years for Namibia to get Walvis Bay back? And I'm very happy for people who played a role in the negotiation of Walvis Bay, especially the former President Bumba and the late first Foreign Minister of Foreign Affairs in Namibia, Dr. Theo Bengurira. But that was the complication of the laws. If it was not for those people and their team, Walvis Bay could still be part of South Africa. And you know how that's going to be very interesting. Then the question is to say, these men and women who tried to understand that laws and also try to negotiate and also come to the conclusion of saying this land must come back. Then the question you're asking yourself is that at that level, whose interest was that law serving? Because when you come to that conclusion, you will be able to understand that there is something that we need to rethink, because we cannot talk about development without understanding. First, you need to understand the law. What is the current system? What are the loopholes? And what is that that you can be able to do? Because you can be politically free, economically in chain. You are politically free, but you are economically in chain. Or you can say everybody is equal before the law. On paper, yes, but in terms of the operation and what laws is saying that, and in terms of operation, you'll be able to realize that there are levels within the sector of the society. There are levels that are being protected by the law. But the question that you are asking is to say, if this is my constitution, if this is my laws, what is that I can do to make sure that I use this law to implement National Development Plan number 6. I use this law to take care of my natural resources. I use this law to make sure that in terms of investment, this is how I operate. And the question also you are asking is, the question that you can also still ask is that it's coming to the foundation, because you will not understand something that you did not contribute into. And I like following South African politics so much, and as it has been, it has quite good relations, or relations, either it's a legal system, it's a political system, it's trade relations with Namibia. And there is one of the accomplished, wealthy, successful, eloquent legal counsel by the name Moses Kakane. And at one point he was a chairperson of African, Pan-African Advocate Association, something like that. And he wrote a very interesting book, because this man found himself at the helm, or at the peak of his career, where he was practicing laws and an advocate. By that, when an advocate is drafting a document for you, I think it's beyond 40,000. Beyond 40,000, just to draft a document to you to reply to the client. And this is a man with a lot of money. But he found himself at a position where he understood law to that extent that he realized that, no man, I think something need to be done. Something need to be changed. Because the moment you go on top of the ranks, then you'll be able to understand that there are guardians of the law that are inhibiting international trade, that are inhibiting equality, that actually not allowing, you know, implementations of freedom of everybody, and also equal participation of everybody. He also came to the point where he was also discriminated with all your money, with all your levels, then because, not really to say because of the color, because of what you are standing was to say, no, you become a lawyer to, because you have already money, you want to do more than that. Then he came to the point he realized to say, no, things are now becoming very tough. It's very important also to change the system, or to contribute to the system with the foundation where we come from, incorporating what we have, see what is working and what is not working. Because there are always things that we can say in terms of Roman Dutch law, this one is still working. It's a standard, it's still working. It's quite good. It's protecting everybody. But there are those that need to be worked on, so that those who are at the edge, the proletarian, will be able to benefit. Now, Moses Kakane, he's an accomplished lawyer who, I think at one point he represented prominent people. It's Malema, Zuma, many other people in high profile, you know, cases in South Africa. He wrote a book, The Odyssey of Liberation, The Mima of a Rebel Advocate. When you read that book, you'll be able to understand, to say, the legal system is not what you see. You need to go into it to understand how it's operating. And I'll ask yourself this. I was looking at go to Zambezi region, then you look at the statistic of young people who are in jail. Young men, energetic, with future. I don't know what they did, but you are just asking yourself to say, if it was those days of traditional authority, these people could be dealt with differently. And are these young men and women going to be corrected by that correctional system? Or just because the law is saying, lock the person up and it's done. Then you are asking yourself, and people come to the point of saying, no, ladies are complaining, there is no men in Namibia. But the law could have assisted in correcting those behaviors. Not to say everybody who committed the crime has gone outside, but the law could have assisted in correcting those behaviors, to say, if you committed this crime, this is how we are going to correct you. This is how you are going to work. This is what you are contributing. You can't just be here and eating taxpayers' money. Because remember, in the economic setting where we are, the person who is suffering and the person who is paying actually for everything is the working class. Is paying for everything. Somebody raped my daughter. Then I have to pay tax again that's going to be used to buy food for this person who is in correctional service. This person was supposed to work. this person was supposed to work. I understand there are those who are working at the farms for correctional services, but we must do beyond that. We must do beyond that. And if we are not analyzing these issues, particularly understanding the foundation of African laws, and also understanding to say what is that that we can take from traditional laws that we can use, and how can we bring these people together? Why can't we come up, even at law school, why can't we have an expert in customary law? Somebody who, when there is a case, a traditional case, this person can go and stand there. You just specialize in customary law. If we want to formalize it, as we say, let's have that equal level. Because when you go to UK, it's a different thing. They do not have one constitution. They have various part of laws that they are using because they understood that it's not only about what is on paper. It's also about how law developed, because with the legal system, any new case which has come about is a record, is a new system, because the judge himself can come to the point where he never seen that case, because there are always new cases which coming in. And the law allows a judge to apply his mind and make that judgment become a law. Look, for example, the case of electronic voting machines. It was a new case in Namibia. It was a new case in Namibia, I think it's 2019. And there was interpretation, legal jargons in the High Court of Namibia. But when a judge come up with a judgment to say there will be no more use of electrical voting machines in Namibia without paper trails, that become a presidency, it become a laws. But in this case, the way we look at it, we lost most of the wealth, mind, and their contribution, because if you go to the history of tradition, there have always been critical cases that have been dealt with traditionally, but they are not recorded, they are not noted, they are not, even if they are noted, they are not respected. Even the current legal practitioners, they understand. But they are not bothered, because they know things are out of the system. But remember that those are the situations which were solved by people with experience. And that's why at the beginning I indicated that being excited about the journey and we do not know where it's going, it's going to be very difficult when you reach at a destination where the bus is going to. Because we need to ask ourselves to say, man, it's 35 years, we did this. We wanted this, but why are you not moving here? Where is the problem? But the bus is moving. The bus has always been moving. But we are all in that bus. But can we ask the driver to say, okay, driver, we want to go to a certain destination. Which route are you taking? And that is the only way that we are going to solve these issues. And looking at the context of... again, in South Africa, it's a former minister of international relations, not the previous one before Ronald Ramora, is Lindiwe Sisulu. At one point, somebody who served in government for quite some times, at one point, Lindiwe Sisulu came out and ask her questions to say, man, what after independence of South Africa, what did the legal system do, or what is the contribution of African legal jurist in economic development of South Africa? She stood up and asked that question. What did they do? Are they the guardian of the system, or they are coming up with innovative ideas to deal with the economic situation of South African? She asked those questions, and she gave a very brilliant presentation, and it was in the newspaper News Times. You'll be able to read it when you go online. And Lidwe Sisulu asked the judiciary to say, who is holding the judicial system accountable? Because at the end of the day, if you are an organ of the state, exercising the power of the state, you must be able to have a positive intention to say, at some point, this is a transformation of the legal system, and this is what the legal system have done to the people of South Africa. You know what happened to Lidwe Sisulu? At that point, I think the former Chief Justice Raymond Zondo was Deputy Chief Justice. I think was Acting Chief Justice. I can't remember correctly. She said, no, the minister must apologize. You cannot touch the legal system. The minister must stand up and apologize. And it's not the professional and all these questions. But the person just asked to say, colleagues, what have you done for the past years in making sure that the legal system, and whose legal system are we serving? Just that question. But now, today what we are asking, especially those from either is from the legal fraternity, either is from the areas of customary laws, is to ask a question to say, what is that we did wrong? Why do we abandon the foundation of African jurisprudence so much? And what is that need to be done to make sure that we reach, what you put on the table? Because at the end of the day, there's a saying to say, repeating something for many times and expecting different results is a wasting of time. Because remember, there's a difference between movement and progress. It's a difference between movement and progress. That is why, at the end of the day, we must ask those questions, and we must also see what we can do. And I want you to get me very correctly. The reason I'm discussing this, the reason I'm saying this, I'm not saying everything which our legal system is doing is wrong. But there are things that we also need to ask questions to say, man, why can't we become productive? Why do we treat all the prisoners as monsters? Because when you look at America has one of the experienced law enforcement agency, the FBI. FBI has always a program to say, among these criminals that we have arrested, which one of them have better skills that we do not have? Can you come up with a contract with this person? When he is serving his sentence, he's also serving the state. Because his knowledge could not just be locked in this room. And they have that program. And it's working for them actually, because you are utilizing the resources that you have. At the same time, you are punishing this person, but you are utilizing the resources. If he's the only chemical engineer that is within the country, then committed a crime, why can't he do his job? Why can't he get that punishment? Because when he was outside, he was working and getting paid. He can work, but the money that he's getting is coming back to the country to develop. If he was a farmer, he must go back to the farm supervised, and he's not getting paid because he's already getting assistance from the state. But in Namibia, once a person is arrested, when that person come out, is committing another crime to go back because the system itself, and we are losing a lot of people that we could have, utilized, or we are losing a lot of good mind. Somebody stole a phone, locked up in jail, he come back, he robbed a bank, locked up in jail. When he come back, he's a leader of a gang. What did you produce? Then we must come to the point to say, man, I think there is something that we are not doing right. And there are countable, there are uncountable numbers of principles which are really limiting people to exercise their full economic rights. Because you need to ask yourself this question also to say, when we say Namibia is the second highest economically unequal country, what could be the problem? Okay, apart from drought, apart from historical colonial past, now we are on our own. We are driving this bus called the government on behalf of the state. But what are those things that we are doing differently to make sure that people are saved? Why housing should not become in some parts it's a human right? Why can't the state make sure that that right, just like freedom of expression, is exercised and they got provisions for that aspect? And you'll be very interested to see also in some judgment. You stole a cow, man. You just stole a cow. You get 30 years in jail. But somebody killed somebody, then get 5 years in jail or 10 years in jail. Then you're asking yourself to say, a cow can be replaced. Yes, it's a valuable property of anybody. Nobody should steal from anybody. But we must go back and look at these things to say, somebody stole a cow, 30 years in jail. Somebody killed somebody, 5 years in jail. It depends on the merit of the interpretation of the law. Depends on the experienced lawyer that we have, and all those things and stuff like that. Then we are saying we are moving in the right direction. I think we must be able to go back and also reevaluate, particularly our legal system. But we cannot move forward without knowing our foundation. We have to know that foundation. And the same way we spoke about incorporating African philosophy, African jurisprudence in the interpretation of the law, is also the same way we need to incorporate African philosophy in formulation of the law. You'll be very interested also to see, like, when you look at South Africa tried so much, particularly with their official language. When you look at in many cases, or almost every case, when the president come to address the state of national address, particularly in South Africa, there is something that is called a praise singer. It's a traditional somebody who understand traditions, is somebody who clear the path before the president, somebody who praise the leader. And speaking in various vernacular languages, that time is a Xhosa, is a Zulu, and that is what has been happening long time ago in South African culture, to say when a king is going to speak, there must be somebody who speak about explaining who is that. It's part of protocols to say there must be somebody before the president come and speak. There must be somebody who's explaining that, no, this man is a king. He did A, B, C, and D. He was a way or way away. He did what, and all these things. But that is how you bring culture and tradition closer to modernity. Because people do not even understand that when it's coming to our culture, there's also development in terms of our culture. There's also development in terms of our culture because things went through transformation. The way, and you also be very interested also to see that in terms of customary laws, they also amended their laws. They amended their laws. And in those years, in Oshuambo tradition, I don't know about other, particularly regarding to the case which I'm giving. When a lady got pregnant without being initiated, without initiation, without going through Orufuko. In those many years ago, people used to be burned down to death. There is already an order from the king to say you can't do that. If you get pregnant without going through Orufuko, or without going through Orufuko, you are not married, then you make sure that we put grass around you, and we burn you down, and we set an example. It was a punishment. But the traditional leaders and those who understood customary laws came to say, no man, I think this thing that we are doing is it's a bit barbaric, but we let us amend those laws. Then we come to the point to say, if something that happened like that, we should not kill a person anymore. A person must be punished differently. Actually, the men must pay for that. With a certain amount of cows, if there's no cows, you can pay cattle. Mirrors, depends on what you have. Because we are end up losing people, some people that we are burning down. It could be that people that would be productive. Because they also went through transformation, but these things are not recognized because nobody really pay attention to say, it's just traditional laws, just customary, let us just accept. But now, how are we going to stand out? How are we going to go into the future if we do not understand how we do things? And there are a lot of things. Let us look at the language. Official language is a standard language to say everybody must use this for formal and all these things. But downgrading other languages, because language, there is also an attachment of culture and also deeper understanding when you understand a certain language. But why should I do trade deals within the country? Or I mean, why should I do business within the country? And I'm drafting a contract in English. You ask yourself this question, and I'm dealing with my counterpart from Uwe Herrero. Why should we cannot come to the point of saying, let us recognize diversity in terms of language, and when you are making laws, these laws are interpreted in all languages, and when somebody does not understand English, does not mean that this person cannot go to parliament. And when you look at South Africa, it's more easier. That's what's happened. You find somebody speaking in Xhosa, the other one is starting in Afrikaans. And it's easy for diversity and also easy to maintain that. But you know why? The law have stated that. Because how are we going to reach African continental free trade area goals and objectives? How are we going to trade with those people if we downgrade our own language? Yes, English must be there, but we must understand that for you to unite with people, you must meet them at their cultural level. You must meet them at their very, and you must understand that. And in diplomacy, they do that. They study your culture, and they do their best to make sure that they respect you in that culture, even greeting. But those are things that we really need to look at, and we must debate about. Because what is very interesting is that when somebody said professionals are being produced, if, for example, you are in an expert within your field, don't disrupt the system to say you wanted to change everything. But don't limit yourself to think. Because if you limit yourself to think, you are also limiting your innovation, and you are also not actually contributing anything. Because you must think, you operate this, you must think and advise to say, why can't we do this? Why can't we amend this law? why property laws in Namibia is a thorn in the flesh? Why Act 16 of the Namibian Constitution is a thorn in anyone's flesh? Why somebody say I should not touch Chapter 3 of the Namibian Constitution because it's not touchable? Who said that? Is it really the case, or is there something that people are avoiding? If I cannot touch it, whose interest am I serving? Because the first priority of any Namibian is Namibia first. We must look at our interest. If I cannot touch Chapter 3 to deal with Namibian interest, who said that? Everybody end there. Few ask questions and go to say, yes, there is BS of right, that is international standard. But when it comes to international standard, what did you contribute to international law? Anybody, I still want to see our contribution to international law. What is our contribution to international law? Or we just accept and operate within that system? But when you go to, we like giving an example of China. When you go to China, when you go to Russia, when you go to, I think, Cuba, when you go to partially Japan also, you may be able to realize that in most cases, when these countries, when they come up with their developmental program, they look at everything. Because everybody at some point went through chaos. Either you went through colonialism, you went through economic downgrade, you went through drought and natural disaster. But you come to the point to say, guys, what is working and what is not working? Let's go to medicine. What is working in medicine? Yes, we have scientific medicine, but you also have what our grandmother have been curing themselves with herbs. Can you compare it to this one? To see which one is working fast and which one is effective. Which one is not, allowing me to be a long-term client of pharmaceutical companies. Is this medication going to cure me or going to make me depend on pharmaceutical companies to continue consuming that medication until I lose my life? What other things that we need to do? When it comes to the law, what is Chinese legal jurisprudence is saying, and how can we combine them with modern laws, and how can we attach them to international laws and operate correctly? Those are the questions that they have asked themselves. When it's coming to the economy, what is the first mode of economy that we were using? How is this new? How, what can we amend instead of just accepting everything? And with that, China started shocking the world with their development. 8% annual development. I mean, 8% rate year to year. Until the point where it is now. It's a formidable force. But what made them formidable is the fact that they respect where they come from. They respect their tradition. They respect their foundation. And you cannot take that from them. But now, somebody may want to ask the question to say, no, David, you spoke a lot and, what is the way forward? Yeah, what is the direction? What is that need to be done? Because Namibians, we are very good with complaining, me included. But what is that which need to be done? Number one, we must intensify inclusive education of all knowledge. That is number one. If you have inclusive education with all knowledge, it's easier for you. And we must also teach people how to think. Because what we see is that when you are being taught how to think, thinking differently is not disrespectful. Because those who disagree respectfully will be able to be respected in the future because they'll be able to see something wrong. Because at the end of the day, you must always ask the question. Because we ask this question even with academia to say, man, why should I study business management. I get a degree, I get a diploma, but I was not even taught the procedure of registering a business within that course. Or I do not even know how to run a tax shop, just a tax shop with a few items. I do not even know how to run this bus of ice cream. I cannot do that business, but I have a business degree. Or why do I have to study? I studied entrepreneurship, then I have a master's degree in entrepreneurship. Then I'm still looking for a job. Why should I study how to employ people? Then I'm still looking for a job in that aspect. Because those are the aspects that we need to look at. So, it's 48 minutes past the hour of 7. And, you can still engage us at 083-288-401-083-288-401.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any other
station. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Yeah, we are moving forward. We are moving forward with Early Morning Scoop. Today, as I indicated, we are speaking about African jurisprudence. We are speaking about African jurisprudence. We are speaking about what is the contribution of African thinkers and also writers, African, guardians of African knowledge, particularly to the law that we are using. And what are some of the challenges that we are facing as Namibians and also Africans in general, particularly with the laws that we are using in terms of traditional laws, in terms of the foundation of African laws? What is our views on trade? Because you may be interested also to see that you may think this thing of international trade, international trade came with modernity. But before colonialism, what we want to do now is African Continental Free Trade Area. Actually, it was partially happening because people were trading with each other. Let's see what the caller has to say. Hello?
Yes, David.
Yes, how are you?
I'm right. How's the morning?
The morning is okay.
Oh, it's not Brew Monday.
No. It's not Brew. We must always be positive.
Yeah.
So how are things?
Everything's right, man.
Okay. Are you driving or what?
No, but you're in the Bluetooth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So what is your view?
Uh, My view is, when it comes to African singing, TikTok, I think is somehow they are not really having that participation when it comes to government. I mean, our institution. This is the nation. Because you remember, you find a person making a deal like their mind. And the person is making a deal where the government is getting 5%. Or 3%, which natural resource is yours, but I'm telling nobody's holding a gun on you to sign that agreement. Nobody's pushing you that if you don't do it, we are going to take you away or what.
Can you do that those years if you are sent by Madume and then file to represent him at a trade deal? Can you do that?
You'll be forgotten for sure that you'll never even
exist. No, you will not even think about it.
No, you will not.
Yeah.
That's the last thing you cannot come in your mind, seriously.
So,
but today, because of the democracy, that's what I'm saying. Really, I somehow African, we forget our history. And the history is not far from, let me bring it home, Namibia. When you look at our country, where you have a lot of people die because of this country. And now you're still having people who are saying, we die for this country, but this person is still breathing. Make you wonder. You make you wonder, my brother, seriously. That's why I'm saying we are not to have that patriotism when it comes to our country.
What can we do? What can we do to make sure that because we are not saying you must change everything. There is always something that you can work on. There's something that you can back with your national knowledge. I mean, your traditional knowledge and the views also.
Exactly. You know why?
Yeah.
What we're supposed to do is we need to invest in the power to the traditional authority.
Okay.
That's the people who understand mostly. And all of us, we belong to traditional before this politician come in.
Just say, because before 1990, there was no...
Exactly.
You
are all about traditional authority. If you are, I take your goat today. The traditional authority, they know how to deal with me. Then I pay back to you. But today, I go to jail. I pay my bail. You lost your goat, I remember. Now I come back to the side. I am even walking toward, even saying, no, what are you going to do?
It's true.
And that revenge is growing with us. Because remember, I lost my God. Now you only paid the government a bill. Now my gods are gone. The property of mine is gone. There's no way to recover.
How should I recover? And you know what? I stole your goat, but when I'm in jail, you are paying for my food also with your tax.
Food, exactly.
Yeah.
You see how democracy is working. That is. Democracy is a problem which we are using today.
No, we must make it with African characteristics because they are good things.
We have to add our things.
Yeah.
Our traditional norm. We have to add. Because if you know, we have a problem when it comes to what? Land distribution.
Yeah.
How those guys, they used to do it?
They
remember, those are people who don't have even a plan.
They
only know that they are, my friend, I'm immigrating you here. This way we are going to set up a homestead. Up to here. But there's not drawing nothing. Then you just have to obey the law. What the guy said.
I hear you.
You see? But now.
I'm
telling you, we are here crying for 300 square, which we are not getting.
And
then we have, there's a part of it that we can go for referendum. That article 3 which you are referring to.
Yeah. I hear you.
But why are politicians not talking about it?
No, I think that is a very good question. it's a very good because you know what, ne? If you want to see something need to be done in terms of what is our contribution to the laws, because remember, after 1908, when the land is taken from those indigenous people. Do you know that there are still people who are living in corridors of farms now?
Exactly.
In corridors of farms, and they don't know where to, because you know, when I come to, when I come to Windhoek, I used to ask people, where are you from? I thought everybody has a home where they are coming from, because some people are just in Windhoek because they don't know, they do not have where they go. They don't know, the where is home, because I thought, no, where are you? Maybe you are, you have a farm at Maheke, but people, I say no, I'm just staying here.
And David, David, give it 50 years to go. It would be the same with us in the north. You're not just coming towns like Omufia, Elana Fidi, you name it.
Yeah.
It will be the same, because you live only in Windhoek, or you live in Nilana Fidi.
Yeah.
But you don't have a place to go call home anymore. You'll find yourself where. You know, we are even now saying these people are vulnerable. Who makes them vulnerable after 55 years?
No, it's us.
Because those people, they don't have anywhere to go. That's why some of them, they are sleeping under the bridge.
Yes, you know.
And today we call them a street kid. But where are they going to go?
In 1 second, because I'll be beaten by Michael Shoveri, we are almost out of time.
Oh, yeah. Okay, anyway, thank you, man, thank for the opportunity.
Thank you for your contribution. Yes, we have 1 minute before we give the mic to Mike to unpack the day. And that is how things stand, because I used to ask people to say, man, when I came to Windhoek, I come from the north. I say, no, where are you coming from? Where is home? So I say, no, home is here. Where are your parents? No, my parents working at the farm. Where is home? Then I came to the point that I was asking a very sensitive question, because that is not how things are. But what we can do in the final analysis is that, in terms of the law, let us develop our legal system. Let us, advance. And also see what we can do. And also those who are legal practitioners, they must think beyond the obvious to say, if there is a loophole in the system, how beneficial is the whole legal system to the people? Because that was the purpose of the law, is to serve the people, not the other way around. And also to look at what are those things that we can take also from our foundation. Because there's always a foundation, because there are always values that are guiding us. But with this, thank you very much for listening to Early Morning Scoop. I'm going to leave you in the good hands of Mike Oshoveri to unpack the day. From me, David Shombe, bye-bye for now, and see you around.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know, a person that doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any other.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom.